Well, you hear me talk a lot about Jesus' revolution on the air today. I want to give you the origin of my thinking on that, how I got to where I am today. I think you'll find it fascinating.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I am back home at last after one of the longest trips I've taken in a while, certainly stateside, as I was out of state, I don't know, 10 days, something like that. I'm thrilled to be back here with you in our studio in the hidden location somewhere outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. And we have an awesome week planned here on the Line of Fire, hoping to have a lot of interesting debates following on calls we got on Friday's broadcast about Catholic beliefs concerning Mary. Tomorrow we're planning on discussing that. What does the Bible say? Is Mary rightly called the mother of God? Is she sinless according to Scripture, virginally conceived? Did she ascend to heaven? Or are these seriously erroneous beliefs held to by Catholics? That's tomorrow, and we will be taking your calls left and right tomorrow. You can weigh in on both sides of the subject. It's possible. Haven't confirmed it yet, but maybe an interesting debate on Wednesday as well. If that happens, we will let you know. And then Thursday, scheduled to debate an Orthodox rabbi who had called in some months ago, and then we've been in correspondence since, and he's been eager to get on the air and have a lengthy discussion. So we should have a fascinating week this week here on the Line of Fire. So glad to have you listening. Here's a number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. You hear me speak often about moral, cultural, spiritual revolution here on the Line of Fire. You hear that sung in the song by Aaron Kreider, Send a Revolution. You hear the announcer introduce me with those very themes. This is something that comes up a lot. I want to explain this to you. I want to tell you how I got to where I am in my thinking today and what started this process, especially in the late 1990s, so going on 13 years ago. And I want to ask you a question. Latest polls indicate something like 18% of Americans think the country is headed in the right direction. So 82% think the country is not heading in the right direction, according to polls. Question. Do you personally feel that through the current political system that radical change can come to America? Or through our current church way of doing things, radical change can come to America? Or do we need a revolution? Not a revolution of violence. Not a revolution of anger, hatred, intimidation. Not a revolution of force. But a revolution meaning a radically different way of going about things. Can America be changed? Can America go in a positive and right direction, moving in the right direction in terms of important values for our country and for the world? Can we head in the right direction using the current political system as is and with our church way of doing things as is? And I say this as a leader in the body, not as someone hostile to the church. I say this as a leader in the body, working within the body. Can we see the kind of change that we need to see here in America, using the current political system that we have and the church way of doing things that we have? Can we see the changes that we need to see? I'm not asking for your theology. Do you believe change is possible? I'm asking for if we believe change is possible, how can we get there? 866-34-TRUTH. Revolution means radical, dramatic, sweeping change. Revolution means out with the old, in with the new. Revolution means that if we continue on the path we're on, we will never see our goals realized. Therefore, something more radical has to happen. If so, what is it? Some eye-opening quotes when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us this Monday on The Line of Fire. Revolution is on my lips today because revolution is in my heart. The kind of revolution that Jesus brings, overcoming evil with good, overcoming hatred with love, Jesus transforming people, people going out and transforming the world. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Simple question for you, simple question. 18% of Americans believe we're heading in the right direction, meaning 82% believe we're heading in the wrong direction as a nation, and that could mean in many, many different ways, economically, politically, morally, socially, etc. Can we head in the right direction using the current political system that we have and with church doing what we have been doing up to now? Can we turn things around in a revolutionary, radical way using the current system and doing things as we have done up to now in our church circles? Or does something radical have to change? Do we need a revolution? Again, the Jesus kind of revolution, not the revolution that uses hatred, violence, anger, intimidation, that is completely contrary to the ways of Jesus. And I'm talking about something far more radical and far more costly. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me tell you how I got in this mindset about revolution. I was wonderfully radically saved 1971, and that was a revolution in my own heart. That was a complete about face. That was a complete turnaround from where I had been to where God wanted me to be. It was literally from spiritual death into spiritual life, from rebellion into service of God, from shooting heroin and using LSD and being disrespectful to my parents and just being a miserable young person full of pride, addicted to rock music and drugs and ungodly living, from there to wanting to serve God, please Him with all my heart, reading the Bible, praying hours a day, seeking to share Jesus with everyone I met, Jewish friends in particular, rabbis. Revolutionary, radical change, no question about it. And over the years, my heart has burned with a desire to see God's people live revolutionary lives, meaning radically changed lives, meaning not living as the world lives, meaning not living as complacent Christians live, meaning living as if what Jesus said was really true, as if God was really God, as if there was eternity ahead of us, either with Him or separated from Him, believing that those things were true. How then should we live? But the word revolution did not occur in my thinking a whole lot. The theme of living a radical Jesus life, I say radical, I mean radical as the world would look at it, much of the church would look at it. That theme was always there in me, and I read numerous books. For example, my 1990 book, How Saved Are We, is written to save people, saying, how saved are we? What does it really mean to follow Jesus? And for many believers reading it today, that would be radical for them. I've got a number of books like that. You could listen to my preaching back for decades, and those themes would always be there. But something happened. Something happened to me in the late 1990s. In fact, it was 1999. I was serving as a leader in the Brownsville Revival, and we were in an amazing season, absolutely amazing season. We had thousands of people coming every week to services in Pensacola, Florida, from around the world. And whatever you heard about the meetings, I was an eyewitness to more than 800 such meetings, and I'm talking about a Jesus-exalting, holiness-exalting, spirit-exalting, repentance-exalting, life-changing series of meetings where people encountered the Lord, turned from their sins, surrendered their lives to Jesus, and were radically, dramatically changed. Radically and dramatically changed. And we saw school grow up from almost nothing, and next thing, we've got over 1,000 students, full-time students. Next thing, we've got people with a heart to serve as missionaries around the world being sent out. It's a time of dreaming dreams and seeing amazing and impossible things happen. In the midst of this, we were doing meetings in New Jersey, Awake, New York, New Jersey. We would go out with our team from Pensacola and do these meetings called Awake America. And we would get, probably between 8,000 and 15,000 people in the meetings. And we're at a meeting. This it happens to be in New Jersey, and great turnout, 8,000-9,000 people. Thousands of people respond to the altar call to get right with God. In fact, I remember, you know, New York, New Jersey, a lot of rules, a lot of union requirements, and so on. And we just had a lot more hoops to jump through in setting up those meetings than others. That's what I was told by our team. And there was a woman who was head of the security, and she was really, really firm that when it came to the altar call, and Evangelist Steve Hill would give the altar call for people to get right with God, when it came to the altar call, that no one could come down the center aisle, which was the really large aisle, and that everyone needed to instead go down the side aisles to respond. And we said, it's not really not going to work. I mean, people come running forward to get right with God, and it's going to be a lot of people. And she was really insistent, and there was no moving her. She said, this is the law, this is the way it's going to be, and so on. Well, I still remember it. It was a wonderful sight when Steve gave the altar call for people to get right with God. She was standing there in the middle aisle. Remember, this is a place that seats thousands of people, and she's standing there in this massive middle aisle. And she's standing there to point people to both side aisles when suddenly she looks and literally several thousand people come running and walking quickly down the aisle to repent to get right with God. And she just took off, got out of the way rather than try to stop the flood of people repenting that night. I leave the meeting that night, another powerful night. And during the service, I had stood up. Normally, I would speak during the day. We'd have a couple thousand people that would come to day sessions. I would speak during the day. Then at night, I would give a brief announcement about our ministry school and a short word of exhortation. And then Steve would come and do the preaching. And I got up and I said, look, this group has come out of the closet, and this group has come out of the closet, and this group has come out of the closet. It's time for God's people to come out of the closet, meaning not be ashamed of the gospel, take the message to the streets, make a difference. I go back to my hotel room, and I'm careful, cautious with TV, and I thought, all right, just going to flip this program on for a moment. It was a documentary, caught my interest. It started with 1979, Ayatollah Khomeini in exile from Iran, 78, 79, and how his messages are being smuggled into Iran and how that leads to an Iranian Islamic revolution, which is still negatively impacting the world. And it goes on, and it's a show about the rise of religious fundamentalism worldwide beginning in the late 70s. It's like a public broadcasting system program called from a series called The People's Century. And the video is called God Fights Back. You can still get the DVD. I highly recommend watching it. God Fights Back. And they were contrasting the rise of the religious right in Islam in America. I shouldn't say contrasting, just comparing. But it was a shocker to watch. And as I'm watching it, they show clips. Jerry Falwell introducing Ronald Reagan. This is now from the late 70s. I'm watching 20 years later. Introducing Ronald Reagan, and Ronald Reagan was really going to be the hope of the Republican Party and the hope of the religious right and the one that was going to bring change to America. And then after him, James Robeson speaks. These were audio clips, and the crowd there, I don't know, 10,000 people, very similar to the crowd I had just spoken to earlier and talked about coming out of the closet and so on. And I want you to hear these two comments, first from Jerry Falwell and then from James Robeson.
We have a threefold primary responsibility. Number one, get people saved. Number two, get them baptized. Number three, get them registered to vote.
I'm sick and tired of hearing about all of the radicals and the perverts and the liberals and the leftists and the communists coming out of the closets. It's time for God's people to come out of the closets, out of the churches, and change America. We must do it.
All right, I watched that, and I was stunned. Nothing less than stunned. I was stunned for a couple of reasons. I was stunned because I realized that 20 years later, we were still looking at things the same way. That 20 years later, we're still thinking, okay, we elect this one, and this one's going to bring about change. We elect this one, and this one's going to do it. And things had degenerated so radically from 1979 to 1999, let alone from 1999 to 2012. I mean, things had degenerated in amazingly radical ways in terms of the social and moral issues that we were standing for and fighting for. And then hearing the emphasis from Dr. Falwell, whom I deeply appreciate and respect, but Dr. Falwell's comments that we have a threefold responsibility to get people saved, to get them baptized, and to get them registered to vote. That's the threefold responsibility, saved, baptized, and registered to vote. And then James Robeson's comments, another man from whom I have immense respect, talking about coming out of the closet. Now, he was talking about coming out of the closet and standing up and voting and so on. I was talking about it a different way, but I used almost identical words to him 20 years later, and I thought we're saying the same thing, and look where we are. We need a revolution.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You see, a revolution doesn't start just because people think, I don't know, maybe it's time for change. What do you think? No. That's not how revolution starts. Revolution doesn't start with two billionaires sitting on a yacht sipping champagne saying, yeah, we need to start a revolution, gonna change the world. Things. No, that normally it's the oppressed. It's the people who believe they are oppressed, the people who believe that life as it is not worth living, but the cause is worth dying for, the people who are convinced that the system has failed. That's where revolutions tend to start. And they don't start as one option among five or ten. They start as the only thing that seems reasonable. We have to give ourselves to change. Now, the world does it normally in destructive ways, with bloodshed, with violence, with hatred, with intimidation, with manipulation, with appeal to the flesh. The Jesus revolution operates on entirely different principles. It crucifies the flesh. It crucifies hatred. It crucifies carnal anger. It crucifies violence. And it says Jesus is a cause worth living for and dying for, and we are not here for ourselves. We're here to bring about radical change. But there has to be some conviction that the system has failed. I am involved in the political process, but I do not trust the political system to bring about the kind of change we need, which for me means that the people who are willing to stand up and do what's right, period, and who are willing to say, if I have to buck the system, I will buck the system, but I'm going to stand for what's right and not bow down to ungodly coalitions and agreements in order to get votes, etc. That person is one that has the most potential to bring about the kind of change necessary. Otherwise, we can elect a good person who'll do better than a bad person in terms of the wrong candidate and another candidate doing better and so on. But it's not going to bring about the revolutionary change we need in the political realm. And on the church end, more of the same will only produce more of the same. We have holy spiritual tools. We have weapons of prayer and the word of God and godly living and preaching the gospel that no other group has. And yet, for the most part, for a whole generation now, rather than us going and changing the world's changed us. The values of the world have become the values of the church. And it doesn't have to be like this, friends. It doesn't have to be like this. We are not a minority without hope and without God. We are God's people, full of God's Spirit, with the Word of God. We have the opportunity to bring about radical change through the gospel. We're the only ones who really have a message of radical change. And yet we kind of think just doing things as we know them, same old is going to do it. Doing the same old better than the last same old is not going to bring about the kind of change that God desires. It's not going to bring about the Great Commission of making disciples of the nations, is it? Can we see the kind of change we need to see with our status quo Christianity and our status quo political system, or does there need to be a revolution, a Jesus revolution? That's why I wrote the books Revolution, the Call to Holy War, and Revolution in the Church, Challenging the Religious System, with a call to radical change. 866-34-TRUTH to the phones. Paula in Huntington on Long Island, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown. Pleasure to speak with you. We have a similar background. I'm a Jew, considers herself a Christian, even though I haven't been baptized. I just want to point out a number of things. You're absolutely correct. We need a revolution, but we need an internal revolution because it's not going to happen any other way. I was reading you've heard of Martin Lloyd Jones?
Of course.
UK, the UK author. I was reading one of his books, and he talks about the magnitude of what the cross means and understands and how we should consider ourselves privileged. And all I'm saying is, in a world today with unbelievable cruelty and narcissistic self-absorption, we are more self-absorbed than any other generation. And I've heard this from many, many people, secular and religious. We are more alone than ever before, especially the Jewish people. The Jewish people have the highest rate of loneliness and aloneness than ever before. I have gone to 3 churches in Huntington that espouse what I would call very nice people, but comfortable Christianity. They do not believe they can't help the poor. We are riddled with distraction and trivia. And unless you've been through a magnitude of suffering, now, I have been through suffering because I was in a coma 3 times and almost died. So then I started to look for other questions and answers. And if I wasn't brought to that point, I knew God was calling me for many years because I looked at New Age crackpot philosophies, and it wasn't working, and I was actually afraid of the word Jesus. But
let me just jump in. Thank God for his mercy in your life, and I'm so glad to hear another Jew has realized that Jesus is our Messiah, is the answer. Although I'd encourage you, though, to go ahead and get immersed in water as a public demonstration.
I absolutely want to. I just I cannot get anybody to help me. My family, I'm just saying in terms of I have a wealthy brother. Everybody has abandoned me because I'm poor.
Yeah, Paul,
you even hooked me up with somebody from Jesus.
Okay, right. I thought we had spoken with Jews for Jesus, and I'm sure they're happy to continue to work with you and stand with you. What I just wanted to say, Paula, was you hit at the heart of larger issues, the narcissism, the self-absorption of our society. In other words, we don't just add Jesus to who we are. We don't just add Jesus to our carnality. We don't just add Jesus to our political system and think that change comes. You hit the nail on the head. There must be an internal revolution. And Paul, as you know, in your own life, that means a lot of upheaval. And thank God for his mercy sparing you. And continue to be strong. You're not alone. They're more with you than not with you. And let us know how we can be a help and blessing to you. Thank you, Paula. So to emphasize this, an internal revolution, radical, dramatic, sweeping change, starting with you, starting with me. Could it be that God wants to change us more dramatically than we realize? Could it be that God wants to use us as agents of change more dramatically than we realize? I want to encourage you on that note to take advantage of a very special offer this week. 2 tools that will impact and change your lives in different ways. The Holy Desperation message, one of the most intense, powerful messages God ever gave me to preach in my life, preached in the heart of revival years back in a beautiful CD package, Holy Desperation. You want a message that'll charge you, bring you to your knees, bring you to a place of change. I can't recommend another message more strongly. Together with a super important resource, Volume 1 of Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus, the number one tool I have to give you an understanding of reaching Jewish people, even with issues like the Holocaust and church history, and a great thing to give to Jewish people. It's a $35 value, just $20 today, postage paid. Call to order 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978, or order online, askdrbrown.org, click on the line of fire. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. Friends, let's be transformed by the Lord and go and change our world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Listen to those words. Revolution. Shake the nations. You know another reason why we have to have revolution, friends? And I'll say it yet again for those just tuning in. I'm not talking about violent revolution. I'm not talking about revolution the way the Occupy people would be talking about it. I'm not talking about revolution in the lines of a communist revolution or Cuban revolution using violence and physical force. I'm talking about a Jesus revolution where we are so radically changed by the Lord, we go and radically change our world, whatever the cost or consequence. We don't take life, but we give our lives for the gospel to help to serve others and to stand against what is wrong. You know another reason why we have to have revolution? Because we're in the midst of a revolution. Because a revolution has come our way. Because revolutionary change is taking place in society, and you don't fight revolutionary change with the status quo. Listen to this quote from 2006. Matt Foreman, then the executive director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, had this to say. May I give his title again? 2006, this is. We're in 2012. Matt Foreman, then the executive director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, said this. You want to know the state of our movement on November 10th, 2006? We are strong, unbowed, unbeaten, vibrant, energized, and ready to kick some butt. What does that mean? This is what he said. The agenda and vision that we must proudly articulate is that, yes, indeed, we intend to change society. From the viewpoint of Matt Foreman, National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, changing society means, in their minds, equality, no discrimination. It means embracing homosexuality, bisexuality, and transgenderism as natural alternatives to heterosexuality, none better or worse than the other. In other words, in their mind, their goals are noble. In their minds, they're fighting for what is right. I don't doubt that for a split second. And I say without any question that what they're fighting for is ultimately wrong, ultimately in society's worst interest, and contrary to God's will, God's ways, and God's best. But when people are coming with a revolutionary agenda to change society and we respond with a status quo response, we lose, guaranteed, whatever the situation is. If you have two sports teams playing against each other. And yes, Tim Tebow lost over the weekend, but that was going to happen. The Tebow mania and the John 3:16 message and everything else is getting out there nonetheless, and we shall see what the future holds for young Tim Tebow. But you've got two sports teams, and one sports team says, it's just another game, you know, like to win the game, but it's just another game. The other sports team says, whatever it costs, whatever it takes, we have to win. If it takes our lives, we have to win. No sacrifice is too great to win this game. That's the team that's going to win. Dr. Mel White, former pastor, seminary professor, ghost author for men like Jerry Falwell, and a committed homosexual leader. Dr. Mel White, quote, it is time for a campaign of relentless, nonviolent resistance that will convince our adversaries to do justice at last. They have assumed that we are infinitely patient or too comfortable to call for revolution. For their sake and for the sake of the nation, we must prove them wrong. Gay activists are calling for revolution. In their mind, again, they are fighting for equality. They are fighting for what is right. They are fighting for, quote, the right to love and the right to be who they are. I say they are fighting for things contrary to God's will, contrary to God's best, contrary to what is best for our society. And ultimately, those who came out of the closet want to put us in the closet. And in fact, it is happening day by day by day. A status quo response will not bring about the necessary change. We need to get on our knees. We need to seek the face of God. We need to ask Him, Lord, change me, start the work in me. And then we need to go out and be world changers. Nothing less will do.
Oh God of burning, cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Let me give you some examples of why I say we have to have revolution and that more of the same will only produce more of the same. That's where I wrote A Queer Thing Happened to America, to help awaken the conscience of the nation to the dire situation in which we find ourselves, in which, as I say, those who came out of the closet fighting for, in their minds, equality and equal rights, those who came out of the closet want to put us in the closet. I'm talking about activists. And sadly, many Christians, Christian leaders, are just shutting the doors, going in the closet themselves. And then when we do take a stand, we just take a political stand and think if we can just get such and such politician elected, that'll change everything. It's going to take something more radical. So if you haven't been following this, Vicky Knox is a special education teacher in Union High School. She's been teaching for 20 years, okay? Last fall, in her school, there was a poster, a special display, and it was celebrating lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender history in the school, Well, she was not happy to see that, and on her own Facebook page, she was asked a question, had the school really put this display up? She said, yes, they did, and it's still there. I'm pitching a fit. She said this, homosexuality is a perverted spirit that has existed from the beginning of creation. I do not pretend to know all things, nor do I pretend to have biases, not to have biases, failings, and faults, but I know sin, and it breeds like cancer. And she said on her Facebook page again, So what if I'm against blatantly displaying homosexuality anywhere, but especially schools? So what? That is not a crime. Well, she was taken to court over this. And according to John Perugano, who is a former local government official and municipal judge, hateful comments from a teacher cannot be tolerated. She has a right to say it, but she does not have a right to keep her job after saying it. According to her husband, when interviewed on CBS, everybody's entitled to an opinion. They can persecute her, but they can't prosecute her. Okay, 20 years of teaching. No complaints within the school from what I understand. And she describes herself as a Jesus freak on Facebook. Now, you may have said things differently than the way she said them. She's not advocating violence against a group. She simply is saying that my school has a proud display about homosexuality in the hallway, celebrating different lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender celebrities, and she's upset about it. She has every right to be upset about that. The school has no business celebrating that. Period. It's a school, and the school has no business celebrating this. And there is no mandate for New Jersey schools, state mandate, to be doing this. So you may agree with what she said on Facebook. You may not. But this is on her private time, on a private Facebook page, meaning this is not a school page. So the fact that this is now being taken up, so she's tenured professor or tenured high school teacher, and right now she's on a leave of absence, and they are threatening to fire her. So much for freedom of speech. So much for freedom of speech. You can't even make comments on your Facebook page, whether you find the comments objectionable or not. Freedom of speech is no. Not when it gets in the way of gay activism. Not when it gets in the way of gay activism. I'm sounding the alarm once again, as we often do here on The Line of Fire, to say more of the same is not going to do it. People with revolutionary convictions wanting to bring revolutionary change to our society are active and outspoken. It would be one thing if we were passionate in prayer on our knees before God and really going after him, taking advantage of his eternal promises and his eternal power. if we were really going after him with a broken heart for a hurting world and a dying society, and then saying, Lord, move, Lord, act, and Lord, what can I do to bring about change? How can I be used to serve you in an effective way? If we were at least responding like that, but for the most part, we're kind of deadened to this. I just want to play a clip for you. This is a girl, goes by the name of Taylor, and she posted a clip on YouTube calling for a boycott of Girl Scout cookies. I want you to hear what she has to say.
Hello. I've been a Girl Scout for 8 years, so why would I ask you to boycott Girl Scout cookies? One reason is that I have been taught by Girl Scouts to advocate for my beliefs and to discover, connect, and take action when I see something I want to change in the world. The problem is, what I want to help change is Girl Scouts. Right now, Girl Scouts of the USA, or GSUSA, is not being honest with us girls, its troops, its leaders, its parents, or the American public. Did you know that in October 2011, Girl Scouts admitted they allow transgender boys from kindergarten through the 12th grade? In fact, Colorado Girl Scouts Vice President for Communications, Rachel Trujillo, was quoted in an article by Baptist Press. The article, entitled Girl Scouts Admitting a Boy Draws Backlash, has Ms. Trujillo saying this, quote, "We accept all girls in kindergarten through 12th grade as members. If a child identifies as a girl and the child's family presents her as a girl, Girl Scouts of Colorado welcomes her as a Girl Scout."
All right. The video goes on and expands on this more fully and expresses the objection to it. I plan on some point to have someone on, a guest who's really focused on Girl Scouts and their gay activist agenda. Girl Scouts, yes. Plan to have a guest on that can talk about that in greater length. But I play this little clip to say that it was posted originally on YouTube with comments blocked. In other words, you could not weigh in with your comments and say you like it or don't like it. So someone else posted it, obviously gay activist friendly. It has, as of today when I looked at it, 83,319 views, which is not viral on YouTube, but it's a good amount of views. But here's what's interesting. 264 people clicked that they like it. 2,686 clicked that they don't like it. So literally 10 to 1 do not like it. And then I'm looking on the side with video clip after video clip after video clip, a few of which I've watched, bashing this girl, saying, what's your problem? What's your problem? So the Girl Scout has boys who feel they're girls. What's your problem with that? Friends, and please don't tell me, well, the end is near, Jesus is coming. I know the end is near. I know Jesus is coming. I know the end has been near for many decades and many centuries, if you want to use biblical terminology. But I was told when I got saved 40 years ago, it's all over. Jesus is coming any moment. And it's 40 years later now, and our oldest grandchild turned 11 on Saturday. And I was 16 when I got saved. Our oldest grandchild is 5 years younger than me when I got saved. So please hear me, friends. Nothing less than a revolution will do, and it will start by there being a revolution in our own thinking. It starts with us living for God and taking the teachings of Jesus seriously and getting down on our knees and reading through the New Testament saying, Lord, do you really mean this? Lord, when you said to leave everything and follow you, did you really mean that? Lord, when you talked about what really mattered and what does it profit us if we gain the whole world and lose our own soul, did you really mean that? 866-34-TRUTH. Mary in Jersey City, New Jersey, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, thanks. You know, I think my thinking is that someone once said that, I don't remember who said it, but there's a quote that someone said that whatever we're against weakens us, and whatever we're for strengthens us. And I think that it seems to me that we're fighting the battle in a way that weakens us, because we're against this, we're against that, and whatever. You know, for example, the teacher who was suspended from the school, I think in that school there should be the Christian students, instead of focusing on they're against homosexuality, they should focus on starting clubs that celebrate heterosexuality and celebrate virginity and whatever other positive. positive virtues they want to celebrate and focus on their relationship with God and what they want to spread throughout the school as opposed to whatever someone else is doing that they're against. So that's my take on
that. Yeah, well, you know, a couple of things of interest. The teacher who had posted those comments actually led a Jesus-oriented group on the campus. I say Jesus-oriented only because I forget the name of it. But let's just say this. I do believe we need to speak out against what's wrong, and that can often stir us to what's right. But you're absolutely right. If we simply, in an unashamed, passionate way, gave ourselves to the gospel, the way people who want to bring about change in other ways gave themselves to their cause, the world would be transformed. Thank you for weighing in. Amen to that.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown seeking to stir your heart, encourage your heart to be a Jesus revolutionary today. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. Programming note, tomorrow is the day, the first time in our radio history, after years of daily broadcasting, that we will debate the issue of Catholic beliefs concerning Mary. Ready to have folks call in, wanted to talk about that today. That's tomorrow, all right? Tomorrow, that's what we're focusing on in response to some calls on Friday. Also Thursday, should be debating an Orthodox rabbi, and perhaps even another debate on Wednesday with a gay activist. We'll see if that happens, but it's going to be an edifying, eye-opening, and yes, controversial week. When I wrote the book, Revolution in the Church, Challenging the Religious System with a Call for Radical Change, a few basic things I laid out as a part of the body of Christ, part of the body of Messiah myself, as a leader in the body, as a friend of pastors across America and around the world, as one who is not an enemy of the church, but rather one who wants to stand with local believers, local leaders everywhere, and say, together we can make a difference with the help and grace and power of God, who is with us always as we go to do his work. I suggest a few simple things that would help change our thinking. Fundamental, simple things. Number one, the church is not a building. We refer to church as building. In Spanish, for example, iglesia is both the place where you meet and the people themselves. It comes from the Greek ekklesia, but ekklesia is the people. It's not the building. It's the people. And it is absolutely essential that we put our emphasis on being the church. Yes, we gather together. By all means, gather together in small groups and large groups. I love corporate gatherings. I love small gatherings. Of course, we gather together, but the emphasis should be on being the church rather than going to church. We are the body, and we go and make a difference. It is massively important in our thinking because we tend to put our emphasis on a place, on a facility, on a gathering, as opposed to a being 24/7 God's people in society. A second thing that's so important to understand is that the body is not an audience. The preacher is not the performer. The body is not the audience. We don't go to be entertained by the worship team and to be entertained by the powerful preacher or teacher. We go to be with brothers and sisters, to worship God, to receive afresh, so then we can go and make a difference. We're not an audience. Audiences don't threaten the devil. Audiences don't start revolutions. And a third thing is that every believer is called to be a disciple. The church is not a building. The body is not an audience. And every believer is called to be a disciple. That's what I lay out in the opening chapters of my book, Revolution in the Church. We're not offering that as a resource, but it's readily available. Fundamentally, when we read the words of Jesus calling his disciples and calling people to leave everything and follow him, we think that he's talking to Peter and John and, you know, the first 12 and the people who are alive in his day. We rarely apply these words to ourselves, but disciple is the main way that we are identified in the book of Acts, for example. And it's the main term that's used to describe followers of Jesus in the New Testament as a whole. we're not just believers. We're not just Christians. We're not just Messianic Jews. We are disciples. And not just disciples in terms of rabbinic learners, Talmidim, but disciples in terms of leave everything, follow the master. What would happen if Jesus came walking through our neighborhood and said, follow me, follow me. It may cost you everything, but follow me. People will hate you, reject you, but follow me. Your own family may turn on you, but follow me. Oh, not because of our violent ideas or our hateful ideas or intimidating ideas, but because of the ways of Jesus, and the world hates him and it'll hate us the way it hated him. I wonder how many would follow. I wonder how many would say, Lord, here I am, send me, use me. Friends, we are living in radical revolutionary times, more so than any time in my life, even more so than in the 60s. What are we as God's people doing about it? Anna in Manhattan, a little short on time, but please dive right in. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes. I wanted to say this country is about freedom of speech, right? And why wouldn't that... Yes. Why would it that the lady doesn't have right to speak about Christ, but the school have rights to give to the gay people? I mean...
You're absolutely right, Anna. It is 100% unequal. The viewpoint is that gay rights, now this is a fundamental civil right like our African-American friends fought for in the 60s and 70s, civil rights. So this is now the gay civil rights movement, and therefore the speech is prejudicial, or this teacher will not be able to uphold the anti-bullying campaign, which is complete nonsense. You're 100% right. This is a matter of massive inequality. Freedoms go one way only. Rights go one way only. And it is ultimately against the Christian view. What if there was a gay teacher that posted his or her hostility towards Christianity on a Facebook page? Do you think that they would be talking about firing a tenured teacher for that?
They would not. They would not.
Absolutely.
And this is very wrong because, you know, God is the creator of this whole world and this country, and we all should have respect for Christ, for God. I mean, it's,
yeah, the fact, of course, you're 100% right. It's completely outrageous. It is completely off on every level, and it's another reason why nothing less than radical Jesus revolution beginning in our hearts and spreading to society will work. Thank you for calling in with sobriety and clarity. It is that simple, and it's why I say we must have a Jesus revolution, and just the system as is and church as is will not bring about the change that God desires or that we desire. Those that will be able to catch the next hour, I'm going to take this up with my guest, radio host, author Steve Dace, co-author of the new book, We Won't Get Fooled Again, together with Greg Jackson, Where the Christian Right Went Wrong, and How to Make America Right Again. So you'll be able to catch that later online if you're not getting this next hour at AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. Friends, good news. I continue to hear from rabbis. Some years ago, I got a call from an Orthodox rabbi who had come to faith. And we always hear about how my materials, Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus, are well known and are making an impact, and how they don't like the impact that the books are making, the influence that they're having. We want to get into your hands volume one of Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus. I just finished teaching Jewish apologetics in Denver Seminary, 30 plus hours last week. And going through the book, I was actually pleased to see the content and what's there and the riches of the discussion, the quotes that are there. Volume one of Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus. But listen, when we send it to you, I'm going to send it to you free with one of the most stirring messages I ever preached in my life called Holy Desperation. It's a $35 value, $20 today, postage paid, but call to order 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line, Jesus was not just a sweet religious leader. Jesus was the ultimate revolutionary who ever lived on this earth, and he says to us, follow me. Live as I live, do as I did. I'm about to interview an author and national radio host who is convinced that the religious right, with all its good intentions, has not gotten to the heart of our nation's problems and maybe has done more harm than good.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I spent a good part of the last hour explaining why I think in revolutionary terms, why I say we must have a Jesus revolution, not a revolution of violence, anger, hatred, intimidation, but following the radical claims of Jesus, living them out in our society. And to the extent we put our trust in the political process to bring about that change, we'll be disappointed. To the extent that we go on with church as usual, we will be disappointed. I've got on the air with me, about to join me, radio host, national syndicated radio host on both networks, RYAM Truth Radio Network and Salem Communications, and co-author with Greg Jackson of the book We Won't Get Fooled Again, Steve Dace. And before I bring Steve on with his book, We Won't Get Fooled Again, Where the Christian Right Went Wrong and How to Make America Right Again, I just want to play two clips I played last hour from around 1979, Jerry Falwell and James Robeson at a major meeting, 8,000-10,000 people at least present, as Ronald Reagan is about to be introduced. And certainly as the religious right, there was a tremendous hope that if we could get out and back him politically, if we could stand together for Ronald Reagan, change would come to America. And certainly he was a good president, did many good things. But the hope that we put in him as the religious right was certainly disappointed as far as bringing about any type of radical moral social change or even focused pro-life change. So listen to these two quotes. First, Reverend Falwell, and then Reverend Robeson.
We have a threefold primary responsibility. Number one, get people saved. Number two, get them baptized. Number three, get them registered to vote.
I'm sick and tired of hearing about all of the radicals and the perverts and the liberals and the leftists and the communists coming out of the closets. It's time for God's people to come out of the closets, out of the churches, and change America. We must do it.
Now, of course, I absolutely reverberate with the second quote, the call to come out of the closet and change America. I would say at that point that James Robeson's greater emphasis was on getting out to vote to bring about change and political involvement as opposed to primarily a gospel message. And I say that with the utmost respect for James Robeson. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Without further ado, hey, Steve, thanks for taking time out to join me today.
Dr. Brown, good to talk to you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. Well, I'm holding this book in my hand, which I was eager to receive, We Won't Get Fooled Again, Where the Christian Right Went Wrong and How to Make America Right Again, Greg Jackson, Steve Dace, with an endorsement right on the front cover from no one less than Mike Huckabee. Steve, just take this opening minute and tell our listeners why you and Greg wrote this book.
We wrote this book because we watched 4 years ago, as someone who has been obviously very consistent on issues that Christian political activism says are the most important, regularly did not get the support of actual Christian leaders. And we started asking ourselves, why is that the case? So we spent 3 years researching and interviewing a lot of these exact same leaders. And basically what we found was that somewhere the religious right took that fork in the road Yogi Berra talked about and determined that it was more important to get a seat at the very wobbly Republican Party table than it was to drive the agenda. And the events that have been playing out since this meeting in Texas over this weekend are right out of the exact same paradigm in this book, and it appears that yet again we are getting fooled again.
All right, so we are going to unpack this. If you differ with our guest or if you'd like to chime in, 866-34-TRUTH. And this is a pull-no-punches book, which is going to get you liked in certain circles and unliked in other circles. Back with Steve Dace.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, so glad to be back from a great fruitful trip to D.C. and then Denver, but back in our home offices, home studio, and above all, house, my own home with my dear wife. Nice to be back off the road. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. My guest today, co-author of the book We Won't Get Fooled Again, Where the Christian Right Went Wrong, How to Make America Right Again, Steve Dace, who authored the book with Greg Jackson. Steve, also a nationally syndicated radio host. 866-34-TRUTH, the number to call. Okay, Steve, let's bottom line this. Your basic view would be that we are somehow putting our trust in electing a candidate who can win or trying to get a certain party, in this case the Republican Party, with enough votes or enough seats, as opposed to electing the right person or getting behind the right person. Is that basically what you've seen over the years?
I have, but I don't even think we're even doing that now. I think that this has really become the blind leading the blind. This is watching James 1:8 play out on a national stage, the double-minded man, unstable in all of his ways. Let me tell you just some things I've seen, Michael, just since we published this book. Sitting here in Iowa, where we syndicate our show from, the First in the Nation caucus state, I get as much access to the presidential candidates and their staffs as virtually any media person in the country does, which is why a lot of them were quoting me in their articles, because we get access to the process. So I pretty much knew everybody who was anybody in this field, with the exception of Mitt Romney and his team. And let me tell you what happened. I saw situations where major pro-family leaders were literally calling Iowans and telling them, hey, Marcus Bachman asked me, Michelle Bachman's husband, asked me to call you on her behalf, but I just want you to know that just since it's you and I talking, hey, if you think Rick Santorum has the better chance to win, then I'm okay with that too. You guys just tell us what you think we ought to do. I saw instances like this over and over and over again. No leadership. You know, we hold this meeting in Texas over the weekend because, man, those pesky presidential primaries just sneak up on you when you least expect it. So how about we just hold a meeting, get everybody together 1 week before the primary that usually determines the nomination, and finally decide, hey, maybe we ought to show some leadership. And then they could not even make that happen if you look at all the media accounts that's come out of this ever since then. And
all
we can get into that as well.
Who were the folks that gathered together in Texas?
A lot of the who's who of pro-family and pro-life leaders. It was a meeting that I was allowed to attend. And in the end, I just thought, you know, I've spent a lot of time away from my family to cover these caucuses the last few weeks. And I've been in these meetings already with smaller groups of people and big-name people. And if you can't come to a consensus in a room of 8 to 12, I don't know how you're going to come to a consensus in a room of 100. And in the end, our entire political paradigm has got to completely change from just even something basic, Michael. We focus on getting involved in the platform. Meanwhile, everybody that makes decisions, they're on things like the rules and the administrative committee. That's what actually runs the agenda. That's who determines who gets the money. That's who determines who actually gets to run. You know, when Jesus said the children of men are smarter than the children of light, boy, I don't know if he had the last 30 years of Christian conservative political activism in mind, but that's the epitaph. I mean, that's our bumper sticker in the end. I mean, it is vain imaginings on parade, and we've got to be much more shrewd, much better prepared, and much more principled than we were in the past.
All right, so how did we go wrong, in your view? Where did the Christian right go wrong? Because this is not just the last 4 years. I mean, you may have been more focused on it in the last 4 years, but this would allegedly be something that goes back to the 70s with the rise of the moral majority, the religious right. Obviously, there was a reaction against things that were happening in society. Obviously, there was a desire to see change come. Certainly, the religious right put an emphasis on political involvement in a way greater than Christians had in the past. Is that in itself wrong to put an emphasis on political involvement? All right, so
no, I don't think it's wrong at all. I mean, if you agree with what Paul says at the Areopagus, that God determines where everyone will live and for how long, well, he put us in a country where we have the freedom to choose and have a voice in our process. It would only make common sense he'd want us to take advantage of that. I mean, Paul used the political process to lobby as a platform for the gospel, invoking his own Roman citizenship and using that as a platform to communicate his belief system. I think that's a model we need to copy, which is instead of lobbying, we're more like witnessing. But it's even more fundamental than that. What happened is after Ronald Reagan got elected, there was a decision to be made, which every movement has to make this decision, which is, will you maintain the integrity of your mission and thus continue to be a prophetic, transcendent voice for what you think is right, or will you become a part of the very system that you once railed against? And I think if you have people listening in this audience right now who are Tea Party people, this book is a cautionary tale. Your movement is almost at the same critical juncture that the Christian conservative movement was at in the mid to late 1980s. And somewhere along the line, those who were anointed leaders of this movement made the decision that it was more important to have a seat at the table than it was to actually advance an agenda. Now, what's ironic about that is that it's the agenda that gets you the seat at the table. Political parties, businesses, and organizations don't just historically flood open their doors for Christians to tell them what they're morally doing wrong. Okay, mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way. All right, so what's ironic is the only way that in this political system you get your seat at the table is by driving an agenda with people and votes behind it that the system is afraid of screwing with, because if they do, they lose your people and they lose their votes. And that is really that's where this became a Faustian bargain. And it's and what's happened is we have been outflanked on every side. And over the course, you've seen this drip, drip, drip theory from every John McCain to Bob Dole to Mitt Romney to George Herbert Walker Bush to George W. Bush. I mean, the scam just continues. And now we're at a point where Bush's former campaign advisor, who ran the Republican National Committee, Ken Mellman, came out and said a year and a half ago, I'm gay, and I want you to know behind the scenes I was working against you the whole time. John McCain used his platform as a U.S. senator to stop the marriage amendment from passing in the 2000s. And then we had Christian leaders go out and talk about how he was the greatest Christian leader of all time, and McCain Palin was the most conservative ticket we've ever had. I mean, the culture is laughing at us, frankly. We have dropped trow and spent a lot of our Christian integrity in the political process. And what have we gotten for it in exchange? The government's not any smaller, taxes aren't any lower, the culture's not any less secular, the schools aren't any less pagan, the judges aren't any less liberal. We are worse off than we were when we started this 30 years ago.
All right, so I'll play the devil's advocate or somebody's advocate here for a moment, all right? And mm-hmm. say, well, that's the lesson we have to learn. We're getting too politically involved. Yeah, there's a place for it. I mean, Paul and so on, but you can't make politics the main theme of the New Testament, the main theme of the ministry of Jesus, the main theme of the ministry of Paul. And in point of fact, we should just actively be giving ourselves to being disciples and making disciples. And yeah, we vote, but that's a whole other battle to fight. And to the extent we put our trust in the political system to change America, to that extent, we'll be disappointed. Let's put our trust in what God's given us to do, use the tools he's given us to do, and be Great Commission Christians, world changers through the gospel, and let politics have its place. But it's secondary. We're putting our heart into it too much.
I agree that we are putting our heart into it too much, but I think that's a false choice. I don't think the choice is actually between, do I essentially live in the city of God while the city of man burns, mm-hmm. And just do word and sacrament until Jesus returns, or that I can save a nation through political activism. I don't think it's that it's either one of those. I think that mm-hmm. A lot of times Christians put either ors where there should be and alsos, and alsos where there should be either ors. What it really is the focus is always on the gospel, period. But there are many different ways and venues that we can witness to that. And in this country, we have a platform that allows us to witness to that that doesn't exist almost anywhere else in the world. And I think we would be derelict in our duty to not take advantage of it. But if our premise is that we're going to reform society through political activism, well, that's where this becomes very flawed. And one of the things that concerns me is when I interviewed a lot of these leaders, and I asked them, what's the biblical rationale for why you supported this candidate or for this level of political compromise? They often do not have biblical examples. You read the book. It's in there a million times. They can't give me biblical reasonings and instead use pagan utilitarian argumentation to defend their political activism. And see, this is now where we have crossed the line. This is where we're now of the world and in it, as opposed to in the world but not of it. And I think this is where we need to use the system to witness to the laws of nature and nature's God, and that righteousness exalts a nation. but we cannot also believe we're going to change the country strictly through the political process, and we certainly won't change the country spending our integrity in the political process. So I don't think some Anabaptist pietistic position is the right way to go, but neither do I think this idea that someone is righteous by virtue of being a Republican, and we just syncretize the gospel with the Republican Party platform, that's been a failure in the last generation as well. I think it's more of a nuanced position between the two.
All right, we come back, Steve. Let's start to go through some of the different folks that you interviewed, from David Barton to Ann Coulter to Tom Minnery of Focus on the Family, some of the responses that you got. And then, to me, the best part of the book is you've got practical conclusions. You've got a way forward. You're not just telling us what's wrong. You're telling us which way to go. We'll be back with Steve Dace, co-author of the book, We Won't Get Fooled Again.
Of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire. Today, my guest, radio host and author Steve Dace, co-author of the book We Won't Get Fooled Again, together with Greg Jackson, Where the Christian Right Went Wrong, How to Make America Right Again, 866-34-TRUTH. Steve, I'm reminded of a little joke illustration I heard years ago. There was a guy standing under, walking down the street, and he sees another guy on his hands and knees under a street light. And the guy's looking for something. He says, "Mister, did you lose something?" He said, "Yeah." And he said, "What'd you lose?" He said, My watch. It's really expensive." And he said, "Okay, you lost it around here?" He goes, "No, down the block." He said, "Well, why are you looking here?" He goes, "Well, the light is better here." It strikes me as a similar kind of thing that right now, the philosophy with many conservative evangelicals is anyone but Obama, and therefore whoever has the best chance of beating President Obama is better, as opposed to, okay, is that our agenda? And of course, there are plenty of people listening with other backgrounds and philosophies, but is that what we're doing, or are we trying to say, okay, if we're going to get behind someone as Christians who can represent our values, who can stand for our values, and win or lose, we're going to make a statement, but ultimately one that we believe can be a winning statement. Would you see it like that?
Absolutely. I think historically the Church of Jesus Christ is at its best when it's defined by what it's for and not what it's against, when it acts on faith and not out of fear, and when it speaks truth prophetically to the culture, as opposed to buying the lie and the scam that it can somehow get into bed with the system and pour new wine into old wineskins from the inside out. It doesn't work that way. And I think we have violated all three of those tactical analyses in the last generation of our political activism. You know, I was at a meeting of a conservative who's who just a few months ago, and I can't tell you how many times I heard from Christian leaders of, "Oh, I just want somebody that can beat, that's better than Obama." And I finally looked at one gentleman who's probably about 30 years older than me and has substantially more revenue in his discretionary wallet, and I looked at him and I said, "You know, do you think as Christians maybe we could see it in our hearts to raise our standard just a little bit higher than the most pagan, unconstitutional, liberal, un-American president the country's ever had? That's where we're setting our sights? That's what we want?" You know, and often when Christians are motivated, Michael, by that which they are against, they almost always end up exactly with that which they don't want. We just saw this 4 years ago. The entire apparatus was, "We've got to beat Hillary Clinton. We've got to beat Hillary Clinton." And that's why Pat Robertson endorsing Rudy Giuliani, of all people, as did Rick Perry. You've got several other Christian leaders like Gary Bauer out there supporting John McCain and Fred Thompson, who got the endorsement of the National Right to Life Committee, despite the fact he opposed the number one legislative initiative of National Right to Life, which is a human life amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And so everybody went out there trying to beat a candidate who didn't even win her party's nomination. And in fact, someone much more liberal and much worse won her party's nomination. All right, this is typically what happens, and it's almost as if you believe in a sovereign God, it's almost as if he just looks down on us and says, "You know what? One more trip around the mountain. You guys haven't figured it out yet."
All right, Ann Coulter has said that Mitt Romney is the candidate to get behind, and he's the best candidate for numerous reasons. There are several interviews you and Greg 11 interviews total between 2004, 2007, and then 2009. Again, folks can get the full text in We Won't Get Fooled Again. But in short, what's the substance of your interaction with Ann Coulter? She is certainly one of the most outspoken and controversial and, for the most part, enjoyable conservative voices. On the other hand, if she represents herself as being a conservative Christian, people would question the depth of the Christian part, what that actually means in her life or philosophy. So you've got, about 12 pages in the book just on Ann Coulter. Tell me about the interaction and the bottom line of these interviews.
The bottom line is, sadly, I think, the commentator that probably has the least amount of credibility in America is Ann Coulter. And I think a Christian that buys another one of her books or anything else that's attached to her is probably going to have to give an account one day to why they wasted the revenue God gave them. She has undermined almost everything Christians say they believe for the last few years, including her recent joining of the board of Go Proud, which is a pro-gay Republican group.
Mm-hmm.
She's just, I don't know how else to put that. I don't say this with joy and glee. You know, I'm not playing Roll Out the Barrel in the background as I'm telling your audience this, Michael, but you ask me a blunt question, I'll give you a blunt answer. And that is that the list of people I know in American politics who I've studied or interviewed or gotten to know who I think have less credibility and less integrity than Ann Coulter, regardless of their belief system, is a real short one.
Hey, Steve, I appreciate your bottom lining it, man. I didn't have you on the air to soft sell things and to be politically correct. All right, tell you what, we've got a minute, then I've got to take care of a few housekeeping issues here. But, Steve, to you, what is conservatism? And should we be defined by conservatism, or is it to the extent conservatism overlaps with Christian values that those things define us?
I think we should be defined by Christian values, and because we haven't been, and the church hasn't defined those, it is no longer moral to be pro-life. It is called conservative. It is no longer moral to be faithful to your spouse. It's called conservative. What's happened is by the church vacating this public square, Michael, and not standing for transcendent moral values, these things have largely become politicized, and they're no longer considered moral. They're considered partisan. And until we reestablish this moral paradigm, it probably doesn't really matter who ultimately wins these elections. At best, you're just playing some variation of defense.
And what do you expect to happen when people read this book? Obviously, they'll be informed, but what's your goal in writing it?
I hope that as a new generation gets a chance to take the baton here and emerge from this chaos, that we will learn both from the successes and the failures of the previous generation, because the country is in much worse shape than it was when James Robison was communicating the point that you played right at the beginning of this interview. We're so much further behind. We're at a historical precipice that nations don't usually last more than a generation or two once they come to the brink of this cliff. And so the reality is that, you know, my old man once asked me, son, do you know why there was so much bravery at the Alamo? And I said, no. And he said, because there wasn't a back door. Okay, there isn't another pragmatic, defeatist compromise for us to make, Michael. I mean, we've only got one way out now, and that is to stand on our principles and try to recover them before the last one out turns out the lights on this country.
Right,
and any other attempt to do this cutely or with a wink or a nod or a seat at the table is just going to further facilitate the disintegration of this constitutional republic. So really, I don't think Christians have much of a choice. You know, Shakespeare once said, necessity is the mother of invention. Yoda once said, do or do not, there is no try. This is it. This is the degree all-in moment if you watch poker on TV. And either in this next generation, we're going to get this right, or there won't be much left of this nation for our children and grandchildren if we don't.
Yeah, well said, Steve, although I don't watch the poker one. Well said. And let me just say this. This is why I use the language of revolution, radical, dramatic, sweeping change, but the Jesus way, not the world's way. Tomorrow, friends, don't miss the debate on Mary. Yes, prompted by calls last Friday, we are devoting all day tomorrow to debating Catholic beliefs about Mary. Be ready to call in with your viewpoint on either side. Stay with us.
Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire today. I spent the first hour broadcasting reminding our listeners as to why we need a Jesus revolution in society. If we put our trust in the political process as we know it, if we put our trust in church as usual as we know it, rather than us changing the world will change us. I've often quoted Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who said the ultimate test of a moral society is the kind of world that it leaves to its children. I've often said that at the rate we're going, we're going to have to apologize to our kids and grandkids who can rightly ask, Mom, Dad, Grandpa, Grandma, what were you doing when our rights were being taken from us? What were you doing when society was being changed? Where were you? I'm not talking about revolution the way the world talks about it, not anger, hatred, intimidation, violence, God forbid. I'm talking about the Jesus method where we, radically changed by the Lord, go and bring radical change to our society. The question is, when it overlaps with politics, we tend to put our trust in the political system. It begins with saying things are very wrong, things need to change. Then we think we need to get involved, we need to stand up, we need to vote. And then it gets to we need to win, as opposed to we need to see a candidate standing for biblical values or righteous values or the things that we know are God's intent in the best interest of our society. And it ends up just with, well, our party has to win, as if we have our party as God's people, that there's God's party and the other party, which once again puts our trust in the political system as opposed to challenging the parties. This is what's right. Who's going to stand up for what's right? 866-34-TRUTH. My guest today, nationally syndicated radio host Steve Dace, co-author with Greg Jackson of the book We Won't Get Fooled Again, Where the Christian Right Went Wrong and How to Make America Right Again. Steve, all right, we have somehow lost Steve there, guys. We'll have to reconnect. Not sure what happened, but I know Steve's voice. I know Steve's voice, and that wasn't Steve. Let me read to you from the conclusion to this book, We Won't Get Fooled Again. Now, it's possible that Steve thought we were only on for the first half hour, or it's possible that he got cut off by a demonic assault. It's possible that there's just a technical glitch somewhere. Or it could be, I haven't talked about it in a while, but getting confirmation from Randy, it could have been aliens. Aliens. We haven't talked about aliens for a while. Okay. From the conclusion, Steve says this at the end of the book, and the book consists of interviews, oh yeah, controversial interviews with people like Ann Coulter, people like Steve Baldwin, former director of Council for National Policy, David Barton, Wall Builders, Bob Enyart, Colorado, excuse me, Right to Life, Joseph Farah, WorldNet Daily, Michael Farris, Homeschool Legal, and on and on. I'll get to the conclusions as soon as I get Steve back on the line here. Okay, Steve, I knew your voice. I knew that dial tone, although it was blunt and clear, was not your voice.
I'm a little bit more opinionated than that.
Yeah, more opinionated, more articulate. All right, we've got 45 seconds before our first break here. Do you identify with one party as God's party and the other party is not? Is that how you look at the political landscape?
No. I look at it as one set of values and issues are God's set of values and issues, and the other set is not.
Got it. And we have to then stand up for the issues that are right. And, Steve, are you thinking the way you're looking at things that it's going to change for the positive with this next election, or is this the time for us to reassess our strategy?
I think if Romney is the nominee, that's a repudiation of everything we've fought for the last 30 years, which is fully documented in the book, and we'll have to completely reassess things to some degree, regardless of whether he's the nominee or not.
Got it. All right, we come back. Steve Dace will unload, share his views. Your eyes will be open. Your thinking will be challenged. Don't miss it.
single flame. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I encourage your friends to go over to Amazon or ChristianBook.com and order We Won't Get Fooled Again, Where the Christian Right Went Wrong, How to Make America Right Again. Greg Jackson and Steve Dace. Steve is with me on the air now. Hopefully one of these days I can get Greg on with me. And Steve is on many of the same radio stations where I am, syndicated nationally. So you may recognize his voice and certainly his strong opinions as he comes on. Steve, a few minutes back, you mentioned three fundamental things that we have abandoned as Christians with regard to our political activism. We have a lot of new listeners come on in this last half hour. Could you reiterate what those three things were, fundamental principles that we've gotten wrong?
Well, sure. Number one is that we have got to drive issues and not personalities or parties. Christians are at our best when we stand prophetically and transcendently outside of the system, speaking truth to it. That history is replete with failed examples of Christians who thought they could change a corrupted system from within, only to find out that whole line that you can't pour new wine into old wineskins is true. Mm-hmm. And so we are at our best operating from outside the system, number one. And number two, that leads to number two, which is, it is not a debate between driving an agenda or getting access and a seat at the table. In our political system, you do not get a seat at the table unless you can drive an agenda. I mean, that's what puts people in prominence. The reason the Republican Party is turning on Christians and trying to marginalize social issues is because they don't believe we can deliver anything. Heck, we can't even unite behind our own candidates. We can't even unite behind what our principles ought to be. We're so easily divided and bought off, they have no incentive to listen to us pressure them at all, because we don't have an agenda. Our agenda is please like us. And what's kind of odd about that, Michael, is we've had 31 contested elections in this country over the definition of marriage. You know how many times marriage has won?
31 times.
Every single time.
Yep.
Never lost. You know, tax cuts has lost elections. Strong national defense has lost elections. Marriage doesn't lose any elections. So we've got the party leadership are turning on us because we have said, hey, as long as you give us a seat at the table, instead of us going to you and saying what we demand of you, we'll go to our own people and say, here's what they're willing to give them instead. So they have no respect for us. So we've got to drive an agenda, get back to here are the issues and the values that we care the most about. And then thirdly, we've got to plan these things out a lot better. I mean, having a meeting in Texas a week before the South Carolina primary, and I read David Brody's piece about this where he starts talking about, well, these endorsements are going to come out piecemeal. That's not going to work. I mean, if anything, you're not going to help Rick Santorum. You're just going to hurt Newt Gingrich's chances of beating Mitt Romney in South Carolina. If you want to help Rick Santorum, you know, Rick Santorum needs resources. And Rick Santorum, I know him. He's a good man. But he doesn't have any money. He's less funded and less staffed and organized than Huckabee was 4 years ago. But do you know who is well-funded? Many of those pro-family and pro-life leaders who were in Texas. You know, I bet you if the 25 million people on their email lists, if they told them all, I went to public school, but I did the math on this, if they had everybody on their list send Rick Santorum $5 one time, he'd have Mitt Romney kind of funding overnight. How can Ron Paul raise $6 million in a Drudge Report money bomb in one day, yet a pro-family, pro-life candidate like Rick Santorum cannot generate the funding necessary from his own organizations that are the base of his support? And see, this our entire tactical premise of the last 30 years was a failure. And it wasn't even that it violated biblical precedent. It was bad political science that caused us to compromise in the end our own biblical witness.
All right, so let's use Ron Paul as an example. I wrote a couple of Ron Paul related articles at the beginning of the year that were posted on townhall.com. One about his followers seeming to be more touchy than others, and I said, is it true, and if so, why? On Ron Paul in Israel, right? I had positive statements of his and then statements that concerned me. But we know with Ron Paul that there are a lot of stances he has that are outside of the mainstream and then leaning more libertarian in certain ways and an international policy. People have called him, accused him of being isolationist, etc. But certainly the reason he has the passionate backing of his supporters, more so per person than your average candidate that's out there, is that they really believe that he stands for different things, that they really believe that he's the guy that, that is willing to dismantle a lot of what's wrong in America to go in a direction that's right and constitutional. Whether people like Dr. Paul or not, it's not the issue. But he's got this passionate support that stands out, and it seems to me it stands out because he is – He's marching to the tune, or let's say beating the tune of a different drummer, and people are therefore following it and marching to it. Is there a lesson to be learned from this?
Sure there is, and that is that I do think we out here in the cheap seats want to challenge the system. Ron Paul represents a challenge to the system. There's several things about him I really, really like. I couldn't agree with him more about 70% of the time, and then I couldn't disagree with him more about 30% of the time. And it's because at its core premise, Ron Paul is arguing Enlightenment-era deism, or the French Revolution. He's not arguing the premise of the American Revolution. I'll give you an example. When he says things like, governments exist to protect our liberty. No, they don't. That's not what the founding documents of this country say. They say government exists to protect our God-given rights. Among them would be liberty. Now, that may seem like a slight distinction. If you have students of history in your audience, that slight distinction is the difference between the peasants storming the Bastille in Paris and killing everything that moves, or people setting up a constitutional republic that's lasted 235 years. Because that distinction is the difference between freedom for the sake of the individual, that I'm free just by virtue of being here, that's a libertarian bent, as opposed to the idea that freedom is a gift of God, and therefore, in order for us to maintain it, we must live up to the responsibilities that God calls each of us as an individual and corporately as a society to live up to. And I think that is why Christians struggle so much with Ron Paul, because his application is very sound. His premise is flawed. What's interesting is the rest of these candidates have the exact opposite problem. A lot of them come at this from the right premise and have the wrong application. And so Dr. Paul is at least offering operative solutions to problems, and that's why you're seeing more people gravitate towards him. I look at a candidate that this should have been the perfect environment for, and this is another cautionary tale for Christians, and that's Michelle Bachmann. There was one candidate in this race who opposed all the bailouts, has been staunchly pro-life from conception her entire career, has never supported any pro-abort or sellout rhinos in primaries. She's never let us down on any issue. Then she sets up a presidential campaign where her closest advisor used to work for John McCain. I sat in a radio studio and watched this advisor during one of these interviews pass her notes of what to say. I remember thinking to myself, you know, I've interviewed candidates for dog catcher, never seen someone pass somebody notes about what to say. And so this environment, it should have been perfect for a Michelle Bachmann. But what happened was she surrounded herself with political people as opposed to principled people. She surrounded herself with people who said, hey, it's what you need to do is water down your belief system to appeal to the masses, as opposed to, hey, let's figure out how to message your belief system to appeal to the masses. Again, that's a distinction, but it's a huge difference. And in the end, her campaign became a total train wreck. Because here's another mistake Christians make, Michael. We often think if the candidate loves Jesus the most, that must mean that they would make the best president. That's not always the case. I mean, the presidency isn't just a philosophical or moral position. It's also one of capability. You know, I know a lot about the Bible. I don't belong anywhere near a pulpit. I don't have the heart for people that a pastor must have. I don't want to get up at 2 a.m. and go to the hospital for someone else's loved ones. Heck, I barely want to do it for my own. So I may have the intellectual capacity to do the job, but I do not have the God-given skill set necessary to actually do it successfully. And see, that's what we need, is we need Christians who don't just have the actual value system, but also are capable of pulling off the job, putting themselves, surrounding themselves with good people, having a plan, being able to execute it, being able to stay on message, being able to message their value system. And in the end, even though Michelle Bachmann might have been the most conservative or consistent conservative Christian that's ever ran for president in the history of this, in the history of the last 30 years of our activism, she had one of the most embarrassingly confused and distorted campaigns.
All right, so the confusion, in your view, comes from not that her message is too radical for America, that her message is too conservative for America, not that her message is too biblical or Christian for America. Rather, it is being repackaged in a way with basically would be a mainstream Republican Party mentality, do it the establishment way or don't do it at all. The fact of the matter is any movement, when it becomes established, will then no longer fight for the things that were its ideals at the time of a movement. A movement becomes established and it becomes entrenched, and it's basically all about the system the good old boy syndrome, as opposed to, hey, we want to bring about positive change through certain values. Steve, tell everyone your website. We just got a few seconds before the break here.
SteveDace.com. That's D-E-A-C-E, SteveDace.com. If you go there today, there's a piece I've written titled Go Big or Go Home, which says that, hey, these pro-family leaders that help Rick, that want to endorse Rick Santorum, they're now on the ballot, Michael, with Rick Santorum. And if they can't move his numbers in the one of the most socially conservative states in the country, then the party establishment is going to say, you guys are a paper tiger. The liberal media is going to say, Christians don't matter. And so this is where, folks, if you're going to put your credibility on the line, then you've got to give him the resources that it takes to actually win and not just an attaboy helmet sticker.
All right. Thanks, Steve. We come back. The way forward, practical steps we need to take.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Just looking at my Facebook page, which is Ask Dr. Brown, Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook, which announced the interview today with Steve Dace together with Greg Jackson, co-author of the new book, We Won't Get Fooled Again, Where the Christian Right Went Wrong, How to Make America Right Again. There's a comment from Andy. Steve Dace is a beast. This should be a great show. Well, there you have it, the beast himself. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Thank you, Michael.
All right. You and Greg and your book, We Won't Get Fooled Again, Where the Christian Right Went Wrong and How to Make America Right Again, which is filled with interviews with some of the best-known conservative and Christian leaders nationally here in America. You then conclude with a lengthy section on the way forward, the key things that we need to do as followers of Jesus first and politically involved people second. And I say second in terms of this is an outgrowth of our faith, not the foundation of our faith.
Exactly.
You have a conclusion, and then you've got some helpful appendixes as well. So let's take these last 3-4 minutes and just lay out key things to move forward. You've got them practically laid out in the book. Let's just give the heart of it until folks can pick up the book and read it.
Well, the reason it's the longest section in the book, Michael, is because we didn't want to write a polemic that had us hiding, looking for our tinfoil hats and waiting to be raptured, but instead gave us a practical plan of what to do better based on the lessons we learned from these interviews. And I'll give your audience a few quick ones. Number one, personalities and not issues. Issues and not personalities. We've got to figure out what is the agenda and drive the agenda. The party wants us to treat this like high school, where the Christians are over here and the libertarians are over there and the party establishment's over here, like the jocks and the geeks and the nerds in the lunchroom, and you all sit at your table and you stay divided. We've got to peddle issues, and whoever's not against us is for us, number one. Number two is we've got to bring the Bible back. We've got to bring the Bible back in our arguments. We've got to bring the Bible back in our thinking process.
No, but you're going to lose the election, Steve. If you do that, then we're certainly going to lose the election. And then at least we get a foot in the door if we leave the Bible out, because otherwise people just think we're fanatical Bible thumpers and so on. So you've got to be completely wrong on that, Steve.
Well, it depends on what your premise is. If you believe in a sovereign God, then the idea that his word doesn't return void means that if we've lost the last 30 years, it's got to be about the messengers and not the message. Mm-hmm. See, I think God is more concerned about people knowing his word and his word being known and transforming lives than who wins elections. And I think, you know, as C.S. Lewis once said, if you aim for heaven, you'll get earth thrown in. When you aim for earth, you end up with neither. And we've ended up with neither for the last 30 years. Not to mention, the Bible's a pretty good book in terms of wisdom, strategy. Look at Nehemiah, for example. What we're trying to do is very similar to what Nehemiah did. And what does he do before he begins his mission? He prays and he plans. Wow. I mean, they don't just have reactionary meetings at the last minute and say, hey, maybe we ought to do something about this whole primary thing. He's got a plan for how to go back to his hometown and rebuild the walls. I also think that we've got to recover the rule of law. Number one, first and foremost, this idea, if I get one more Christian, Michael, that sends me an email that says, send me $10 to fight the courts because they told the pastors they couldn't pray, I'm going to throw up in my mouth, okay? Courts don't make law. And just because a court says that my God-given rights aren't in effect doesn't mean that my God-given rights are no longer in effect. They're either my God-given rights or they're not. We are allowing the left to use unelected judges as a machete to shred the Constitution and our God-given rights back. We've got to recover those things. And another thing I would mention is motive. What is the reason why we do what we do? If our motive is to win this election, to stop Obama, you know what? Listen, do not be deceived. God will not be mocked. A man will always reap what he sows. So if we sow compromise, we will reap compromise. Mm-hmm. If our motive is to glorify God and see people understand that, you know, when we live the way God has called us to live, that we get to stay in the land. And when we don't, there's blessing and cursing. Then I think God will honor those results. I think the more faithful we are, the more a sovereign God miraculously shows up to see him and his son glorified. And I think the reason we haven't seen a lot of that, as it's pointed out in my interview with Tom Minnery with Focus on the Family, is because we don't do that. We focus instead on what we think, what we're going to do, what our plan is. And I think anytime you want to hear God, just laugh out loud, tell him your plans. And we've been telling him our plans for the last 30 years, and I think the country is laughing out loud at us, and it's burning at the same time.
Yeah, and Steve, this is really the heart of the gospel, which is foolishness to people and weakness to people, but is God's power. And mm-hmm. as we stand up for what's right, proclaim what's right, God will back what is right. Steve Dace, D-E-A-C-E, stevedace.com, the book with Greg Jackson, We Won't Get Fooled Again, Where the Christian Right Went Wrong, How to Make America Right Again. Steve, I know you got a few hours of radio still to do. Thanks so much for joining me, and look forward to reconnecting in the coming days.
You've got it, Michael. Take care. God bless you.
All right. God bless. Thank you. All right, friends, that was Steve Dace. And boy, I can't agree more with fundamentals in terms of standing up for what's right, speaking what is right, holding to what we believe to be true based on Scripture, and then putting forth that as an agenda and then asking people to rally around that as opposed to primarily putting our trust in the political system or just trying to get ahead, advance somehow, better to win and have somebody representing us. No, better to stand for what's right. Better to stand for what's right. Compromise will only reap more compromise, as Steve rightly said. And again, to me, this is why I say our focus is more gospel-oriented than political-oriented, and if it is gospel leading into politics, we can make a difference. If it is gospel being compromised by politics, we cannot make a difference. Tomorrow, friends, remember the debate on Mary, Catholic beliefs about Mary, prompted by the calls we got last Friday. I said, great, we're going to set aside a day to talk about this, and I absolutely do not affirm what the Catholic Church teaches about Mary in terms of Mother of God, sinless, virginally conceived, descended to heaven. I absolutely do not affirm those things, but we're going to have a civil discussion as best as we can tomorrow, so be ready to call on both sides of that subject. I am always encouraged when I hear of Jewish people coming to faith through my books, What Do Jewish People Think About Jesus, or Jewish people coming back to faith. And I hear from rabbis at different times about how these books are making an impact or how the books are not liked because they're effective. Well, I just taught a whole week on Jewish apologetics last week. We used as textbook one of the two books, volume one of my series, actually volumes one and two. I'd love to get volume one into all of your hands. It is so eye-opening, so practical on countering the most fundamental Jewish objections to Jesus right up to the Holocaust. You'll find it amazingly eye-opening, practical, and super informing, and a great tool to give to a Jewish person. But together this week, when you get the book, we're sending you free the most challenging message I think I've preached in my life, Holy Desperation, beautifully packaged in a CD case, a real wake-up call, a real challenge to the church to go deeper, to take hold of God, especially if you're from a charismatic background. It might even speak your language even more strongly. But for all believers, it's a $35 value. But this week, together, the book and the CDs, just $20, postage paid. Order today, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978 or online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. My bottom line, friends, we need to wake up now, not later. Now, not after the next generation comes and goes. We need to wake up now and realize this is our time to stand and make a difference, not through the political process primarily, but through the gospel.